You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 3rd of January, 2018. We'll look at the Pelicans, tonight's opponent, and what a stunning turnaround they are from a year ago, and how strangely statistically similar they are to the Jazz. Okay, not that similar. And a deep dig on Donovan Mitchell and the numbers behind the rising star. Plus, we time travel Tuesday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. If you're new to Locked On Jazz, it's your daily podcast about the Utah Jazz, bringing you expertise, insight, behind the curtains look, and geeky numbers that you cannot get anywhere else. Thanks so much for taking a part of your day and spending it with me wherever and however, because of the wonderful podcast world that you have jumped aboard and tuned into. Thanks so much. Today's show is brought to you by Slow the Flow and my friends over at the store. I'm over at the store all the time. So Slow the Flow and our friends at the store. All right, let's start this off with a look at tonight's game against the Pelicans. This is a big one. The Jazz got the first matchup between these two teams. They're battling for a playoff spot. The Cavaliers are sexier when they're in town, but this is a pretty darn big one. The Pelicans are 18-18. DeMarcus is a free agent at the end of the year, so they have to make that decision upcoming, and they haven't done. Every time you think they might have clicked in, they step out. So in the beginning of the year, they won 3 in a row. They weren't good wins. They were Dallas, Chicago, and Indiana. And then they went and lost to Toronto. They won 2 more against the Clippers and the Hawks, so they beat bad teams. And then they went and lost 2 more, so they didn't quite. Then they had a great stretch where they beat the Thunder and the Spurs and the Suns, but then promptly lost 3 in a row, including the loss to the Jazz. Recently, they went and beat 3 bad teams again, Orlando, Miami, and Brooklyn, to have only lost to Dallas and New York in their last 2 games, both of them at home. So they're a funky team. They're 4-4 in their last 8. They're 5-5 in their last 10. They're 6-6 in their last 12. They're 7-7 in their last 14. They're 10-10 in their last 20. And they're 18-18 for the season. They're 9-4 against below 500 teams. So they are, for the most, they are making their living beating lesser teams with their incredible talent of DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis. And offensively, they're the 6th best offensive team in the league. Defensively, they're the 25th ranked team. Why is that relevant? Because it's an incredible switch from last year where they were the exact opposite almost. Last year, they were a top 10 defense and a bottom 5 offense. And they have completely flipped this year into a bad defensive team and a good offensive team while playing the exact same pace of play. Pretty wild to see that kind of difference from year to year. They have some guys. This is what's interesting to me about them as I prepped for them last night. They have some guys that are absolutely on fire. So in the last 10 games, Anthony Davis is averaging 28 points and 9 rebounds a game, shooting 55% from the field and 40% from 3. In the last 10 games, DeMarcus Cousins is averaging 26 points per game, 12 rebounds, right on his season numbers, but 53% from the field and 42% from 3. If you look at Drew Holiday in his last 10 games, 22 points a game, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 54% and 48% from 3. And then Etwan Moore, who's always been underrated, may not be anymore, is averaging 16 points, 3 assists, maybe 3 rebounds. I'll have to check that. 60% shooting and 51%. So those 4 guys are just on fire. They've been playing a little better as of late. Over the last 10 games, they're the 3rd best offense, 24th ranked defense, 9th best team overall. So this is a big challenge. It's actually one where your initial reaction is we'd be better off if we had Favors and Gobert, but I don't know if I think that's true. I actually think Terebko and the ability to stretch the floor, and I don't know how Joe Johnson guards DeMarcus Cousins. That I think will be a difficult if those two get matched up against each other. The big question coming in was DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis together. When Anthony Davis is on the floor, the Pelicans are plus six, and when he's off the floor, they're minus seven per 100 possessions. Jrue Holiday is where they really fall apart when he leaves. He's plus five. When Holiday checks out, they're minus 13. DeMarcus, there's almost no difference between the two when he's on the floor and off the floor. The general experiment of having Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins on the floor when the year started really went, pretty darn well. Let's do this because Omer Asik has not played at all. So when Anthony Davis and DeMarcus Cousins are on the court together, they are a plus four, 3.8. What happened last year is that Jrue Holiday struggled miserably when the two of them were on the floor. Holiday got lost as the point guard and couldn't work it around, and so that's why they went to the idea of Rajon Rondo. When DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis are on the floor together, Anthony Davis shoots 60% from the field and 42% from three. That is incredible. DeMarcus is not quite as good. He's 46-35. Jrue Holiday still struggles. 42% and 26% from three. So that's still real. Now, you remove DeMarcus Cousins and have just Anthony Davis on the floor. I mean, this was the great experiment. I found this team, truly to be one of the most interesting teams coming into the league. And I didn't think enough people talked about them. And I do feel pretty solid they're going to be a playoff team. I don't think it's going to fall apart. So when DeMarcus Cousins is on the court with Anthony Davis, there, as I said, they're a positive 3.8. When Anthony Davis is on the floor without DeMarcus Cousins, they're a positive 10. So they're much better when just Anthony Davis is on the floor and not DeMarcus Cousins. Jrue Holiday doesn't get any better, interestingly. Jrue Holiday still struggles with this, 42%, 26%. Anthony Davis, Jrue Holiday gets a million times better. The minute DeMarcus leaves the floor, Jrue Holiday goes to 53% and 42% from three. Anthony Davis, who, remember, with DeMarcus is unstoppable, 60% from the field, 42% from three, comes back to earth a little bit. He's 50% from the field and 27% from three. Etwan Moore, who is a real threat, stays pretty consistent on both these. And finally, we swap them and we put DeMarcus Cousins on the floor with Anthony Davis off the floor, and you get a minus four. So again, Anthony Davis by himself plus 10, Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins plus four, call it 3.8. Anthony Davis off the floor, DeMarcus Cousins on, minus four. That's actually probably what we'd all assume, right? DeMarcus, I've got a negative vibe on DeMarcus. The impact of this, Jrue Holiday went on the floor with just DeMarcus, 54% and 41% from three. He gets completely lost when on the floor with both of them. And when he's off the floor, when one of those is off the floor, he becomes a force tonight. So keep a close eye on that with Drew Holiday. Today's show is brought to you in part by my friends over at Slow the Flow. One way to look at a success of an NBA player is player efficiency rating. So Stockton, for example, was a PER 21.8, and Karl Malone was a 23.9. The Slow the Flow people have asked me to come up with the WER. I don't know how it works with PAC. It's probably a little PAC-ish. WER is water efficiency rating. You got to boost your WER for the well-being of Utah with easy, subtle changes around the house. Do you know that by installing a low-flow toilet, you save 0.3 gallons per flush? Which doesn't sound like a lot, but start counting your flushes. Don't, actually. It's not a good conversation piece. Another way to boost your rating is taking showers instead of baths, and then reduce your showers down to, you know, three minutes. Keep them under 5 minutes, but we can do better. With a 5-minute shower, you use about 12 to 20 gallons of water. A full tub uses about 70 gallons of water. Little by little, small changes like that took my WER to all-star levels. I'm boasting. I'm talking trash about my WER. And if you wouldn't be surprised if Slow the Flow failed to build a statue of you, if you could do the same. So seriously, WER. Head to slowtheflow.org. Slow the Flow. Save H2O. Preserve our beautiful state. All right, let's do a little Donovan. One of the things I wanted to do on Donovan, unfortunately, I have a kind of custom program I've built. It talks about shot selection and areas and things of that nature, and I really wasn't able to get to it. So there's something wrong with it. It's kind of a bummer. So the obvious one on Donovan is the month-by-month breakdown, which is just remarkable, right? So he goes, his usage rate is actually increased in December up to close to 30%. His points per game have gone from 9 in October to 18 in November to 23 in December. His assists have increased. His rebounds have actually fluctuated a little bit. His effective field goal, or his true shooting percentage, which includes free throws, has gone from 41 to 52 to 61. As scouting reports have zeroed in on him, as I thought it was incredibly grueling, I made the point yesterday on Scotty and Hands that I thought there was a chance he's been through the most brutal stretch of the schedule from regards to the rookie wall. His shooting percentage has gone from 33 to 41 to 51. It's just incredible. 21 games of over 30 minutes already. There seemingly there's not much of a statistical variance depending conference. There does not seem to be huge statistical variance depending on days he's played. The one day off is actually his worst, which is probably from early in the season. The more rest if he gets a lot of rest, he's pretty incredible. I thought the other night it looked like he was that he needed the rest. That he looked like he was the one who, the former 13th pick, pounded out. The interesting one on him, and I've got some geeky numbers I'm going to go to in a second, but is the shooting in different areas. So there were flaws early in his shooting, right? I mean, I think, or in his ability to learn how to get shots off. And I was with Jerry Sloan last night. He loves him. Loves his defense. Loves his effort. Loves how he plays. So if we take a look at some of his tracking numbers from NBA stats, and then we start. So off the catch and shoot three, he's at 43%. And off the bounce, he's at 30%. How about if we look at just December, which obviously was his best month? It's actually the same, which is an incredible. His catch and shoot numbers in the month of December were 49%. Excuse me. What jumps out to me there is when I watched him at his workout, that's what jumped out to me, is I thought he was going to be Klay Thompson. when I watched him at his draft workout, his catch and shoot was as good as I've seen from someone. And I truly thought he was going to be Klay Thompson. And, you know, that's not what he's become. He's pretty fabulous, but it's that truly is what I suspected. He opened the year shooting 3 of 16 on above the break threes. In the month of December, he was 21 of 70 on above the break, so still struggling there at 30%. He was 8 of 12 on corner threes. Okay, so there's still like areas to improve. Restricted area. He started his career 21 of 43, about 50% at the rim. In the month of December, he was 74%. The mid-range shot, he started 14 of 39, a little over 30%. He was 46% in the month of December. These are jumps and still jumps to be had. I mean, I think the above the break and off the bounce three numbers are interesting because he's shooting that a lot and he's not very good at it yet. And he's going to get better. Like, that's the next telling step for him. Dig in to a little geeky stuff. And one of the most interesting numbers on Donovan to me is what he's doing passing. So there's a way now that you can look at passes to shooters. So LeBron, for example, has made the most passes to a shooter in the NBA. Second most is Russell. Here we go. I think Russell has the most passes. That was actually to individual players. I can get to that in a second. Russell leads the league in passes to shooters. LeBron is next. Then James Harden, then Ben Simmons, and Kyle Lowry. Kind of what you'd assume, but interesting. Kind of those are the point guards that are setting up players the most in the league. For Utah, it's Ricky Rubio, as you'd expect. But he's 21st in the league because we distribute it. So if you take the guys who've thrown, you know, maybe the top 100 in the league passes. So that's about 3 per team. You know, 90 is probably a better number. And you look at the shooting percentage off those passes. Chris Paul is 1. Rajon Rondo is 2. That's actually a great note for tonight. Gary Harris is 3. Draymond Green is 4. Kevin Durant's 5. Steph Curry's 6. That makes sense. They're throwing passes to each other. Donovan is 7th. The passes he throws to shooters have the 7th highest percentage in the league. Now, he doesn't throw as many as some of these other guys. Another next number on Donovan that I think inside of this that is particularly interesting, though actually it has slipped a little bit. That's interesting. It has slipped. Oh, no, it has not. I just didn't see his name. Is the quality of shot quality he's giving his teammates. All right, what? So this means that when he throws a pass to somebody and they take a shot, we can look at what the average player would do with that shot and figure out what the shooting percentage should be. So in other words, it also kind of, I think, is a great gravity. You know, he passes when he's giving somebody a better look, not just passing when he needs to get rid of the ball. So the worst in the league are like Frank Ntilikina doesn't quite probably see the floor yet, Courtney Lee, Patty Mills, Corey Joseph, Darren Collison, Shelvin Mack, George Hill. Those guys are passing and not putting guys in positions to succeed. The best in the league is Lou Williams. When he passes, the average effective field goal percentage is 59%. So Lou Williams brings enough people to him that when he distributes it out, guys are getting great now. The Clippers can't shoot, so they're not shooting 59% on those. They're shooting 58%, a little below what they should be, but he's getting them the highest quality looks. Number 2 is DeMarcus Cousins. Interesting. Number 3 is Kent Bazemore. Number 4 is Donovan Mitchell. Number 5 is James Harden. Number 6, Devin Booker. 7, Rajon Rondo. 8, Nikolai Vukovic. They're almost all tied right in there. Chris Paul, 9. Kevin Durant, 10. So the Donovan actually is then giving the fourth best shots. I think that's really interesting. That so he needs to pass more probably, and you know that's an easy comment a lot of people want to make. But the fact is that he is passing to guys that are open. All right, the other one of developmental aspect to him that's really incredible is what he's done on the pick and roll. So if we look at Donovan Mitchell, we're just going to the beginning of the year to November 30th, his pick and roll points per pick and roll were 0.866 on 445 pick and rolls. 0.866. Okay? That's not very good, by the way, if you're wondering. Like, that's bad. That's somebody having a hard time quite figuring out when he comes off the pick and roll where he's getting the shots. He struggled with Rudy a little bit. Since then, since his 0.866, he's 1.06 on the pick and roll. He's great. He's fabulous with Epe Udo. He's good with Rudy Gobert. He's okay with Favors. His pick and roll game has just jumped. In fact, if you start to look at, you know, the best pick and roll players probably since 1.06 is pretty high up on the charts. So incredible development on how to run the pick and roll. Final one I've got for you on the Donovan deep dig today. I'm telling you, geeky numbers you're not getting anywhere else. Is drives. Everyone's wanting to force him left and get off the right hand. He made a beautiful pass when forced left to Favors the other day. When, according to stats, when he has driven 215 times right and 199 left. So pretty similar. He is 1.0 per drive when driving to the right and 1.03 when driving to the left. He's actually, his numbers are actually better going left than going right now. He's done it a little bit less, not a lot, a little bit. And they're actually better. Rubio's are dramatically better if he goes left. Rodney Hood, by the way, are about the exact same either way. Just because I think most people think he's very dominant one side. So kind of an interesting, I hear people all say, well, he doesn't use his left hand. Like, he's fine. He's 14th in the league in drives. Again, if we take the top 100 players in the league, which actually gets us down pretty low. In fact, I'm looking at that. That's just too big a gap. Let's take those guys that have at least 200 drives. So that's the top 76 in the league. His points per drive is 14th in the league. No, that's not right. He's lower. His points is 33rd, so he's in the middle of the pack of his points per drive. And his drives, as I said, his drives, he's about 20th in drives per game. Okay, so that there's another area. See, look. And he will. That's the great thing about him. I don't really understand the difference between isolation and drives, but they do break them out differently. I'll have to figure out what the difference is if those people are wondering. It doesn't quite mean the same thing. Rodney's run our most isolation of anyone on the team, and I don't quite understand. I guess it has to do with, I guess you could iso and pull into a shot instead. So I don't quite know the difference. Isolation drives, I guess, mean you actually make some road toward the basket where isolation doesn't. But isolation is an area where Donovan is still pretty poor. If you take the guys with the, you know, top, let's go with, you know, tops who've taken at least 70 drives, Donovan, points per drive is down near this bottom quadrant, 45th out of 62 guys. All right, so there's your Donovan deep dig, stuff you cannot get anywhere else. Today's show is brought to you in part by The Store. Thank you to The Store for carrying us through the holidays. Incredible. Over at 6200 South, 20th East. They also have, by the way, the Cottonwood Ace Hardware right next to it. And the way the weather with no snow, like if you want to get barbecuing, they've got the biggest Traeger setup of anyone around. So you can go check out their basically Traeger storeroom over there. They've also got the Green Egg, but a lot of great stuff. I just love going over there. You have such a great vibe and feel of local and custom and energy, and the meats are terrific. Picked up beef tenderloin for the family yesterday. When I was there, maybe that was the first I was there, not yesterday. Also picked up some of the Cutter's cookie dough, which we liked. Thank you very much to Scotty, who told me to grab that. I'm going to have to make sure my daughter doesn't grab the milk chocolate next time and grabs a semi-sweet instead. I've told you about the Mudslide cookie. It's my absolute fave. They've got the new kombucha set up. The orange juice, the custom-made orange juice with the orange juice machine maker is a grab every single time. Go to the back, look at the incredible meats they have back there. Snake River's now supplying some of their meats, their barbecue chicken cut up. They have a food bar if you want to grab a quick lunch. They have a hot food bar as well. It's all over at The Store. It's 6200 South and 20th East. Stop by. You'll see just an incredible feel of local and touched in there that I think it'll jump out to you a little bit in kind of rather than some of the cookie cutter feel you get in some other places. All right, let's go into the time machine. Let's go into our bag. Here it is, the bag. Time Machine Tuesday. And our year is, oh, good one, 1997, 98. We are kicking people's butts. Let's go back to 97, 98, Utah Jazz. For Time Machine Tuesday. Franchise Indexed. We use a little basketball reference here. Thank you to them. They do great work. 97-98. It's our second finals run. January 3rd. We are just starting another awesome win streak. We play the Atlanta Hawks and we beat the Vancouver Grizzlies by one on the road on December 28th. December 30th, we beat Denver by 33 to go to 19-11. The Hawks are the opponent at home. Hawks are good. This is a good Hawks team. This Hawks team is Eldridge Kasner, Steve Smith, Christian Laettner, Ty Corbin, Dikembe Mutombo is a starting five. No really interesting names off the bench, but that's a 19-11 Hawks team going up against a 19-11 Jazz team. Kind of a fun game. Jazz start Stockton, Malone, Keefe, Hornacek, and Ostertag. Ostertag has a mammoth night. He goes for 15 and 10 with four blocks. The Jazz trail by six at the end of one, 21-15. They go outscore the Hawks to get it within one by half and then do what I remember so vividly covering that team, is that they always blew you out early in the third. They do that exactly 29-19, then run away winning at 97-82. Piece of play was 84 possessions. Oh my gosh, that's slow. It's horrendous. 84 possession game. Malone had 20 points, 9 rebounds, 6 assists, a steal, 2 blocks on 7 of 13 shooting. Stockton went 6 of 9 with 17 points, 12 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 steals. Hornacek went 5 of 9 with 14. Shandon Anderson came off the bench 5 of 6. Brian Russell came off the bench instead with Adam Keefe starting, went 4 of 6. The rest of the bench had a little bit of a tough night. Greg Foster went 1 for 8. Howard Eisley 0 for 3. Jacques Vaughn 1 for 2. Chris Morris 1 for 3, got 3 shots off. But just our officials that night were Mike Callahan, Bernie Fryer, and Tommy Wood. Mike Callahan's still in the league. That's pretty crazy. But the Jazz beat the Atlanta Hawks 97-87, which was a pretty big matchup. The Jazz would go on. That was actually home. We'd beat Philadelphia in overtime our next game out, then beat Milwaukee, then win in Houston and beat Cleveland and move to 24-11 before dropping to Portland. And later that year, it really clicks in as the Jazz end up going 62-60 and marching to the finals with only three losses before facing the Chicago Bulls. That is your Time Machine Tuesday. A little fun there. We love that feature. We'll be back with you tomorrow. Jazz and the Pelicans tonight. You know what? I just did Time Machine Tuesday on a Wednesday. Was the second show of the week. I just realized that now. You've been sitting there this whole time being like, dude, it's Wednesday? I forgot. My bad. Second show of the week. Time Machine, second show of the week. My bad. See ya. Have a great one.